now from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field. 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Ryan O'Halloran.
Tyler Devitt's really on his game today. Yeah, I love the power, Tony. I love power, period. But I love the power of saying Jaguars Today starts right now, and bam, it happens right there. And we get the intro, and everything's happening. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Glad you are along with us here on the program this morning. Number of things we'll get into. Yesterday, Gus Bradley, Julius Thomas, Allen Robinson all meeting with the media after, bye, Jordan. She waved, and then she turned her head before I could wave back. Bye, Jordan. What's the delay like? Are we on a seven-second delay?
I think it's 20, actually.
Is it 20?
So she's going to get in her car.
She may be getting in her car right now and hearing us wave goodbye to her.
Yeah.
Jordan, get her back in here and wave to us again, please. Seriously.
It'll be like 10:30 by this call.
If you're a team player, get your butt back in the front door, wave to us so we can properly send you off into your good afternoon, good morning, whatever the case may be. O'Halloran was on the scene, as he has been, at OTAs. We had day four yesterday, back on the practice field tomorrow and Friday. Tony.
Yes.
The voice is getting stronger. You sense that?
It's better, yeah.
It's coming back. I'm kind of going through OTAs. I didn't have my football win, much like Kelvin Benjamin doesn't have right now. So I'm doing some sprints with the voice.
You cut down on the camels. That's what it was.
Those camel non-filters will get you, man. You got to use the filter. Tyler, I've learned that. Right?
You should have just switched the American
Spirit. That little stubby pack, though, rolls so nicely in my T-shirt sleeve. You know, and that's kind of why I stick with the Camel non-filters these days. That's not true. Kids do not smoke. Are kids out of school? Kids in Duval are still in school right now, is my belief. Yes, tomorrow's the big clinic for all the coaches, right? That's been well-received over the last couple of years, hasn't it?
Yes, I've been. I went to the first two.
Okay.
From my perspective, it was very informative, because you can learn about certain schemes and some of the things they
do. They'll break it, do special teams, you do return game, do whatever you want, basically,
yeah,
right?
I mean, it's like, you know, the two separate podiums, and, you know, you'll have coordinators and position coaches, and, you know, they're there to answer questions and stuff.
I think this year, too, it's becoming, the way Marcus Pollard explained it to Tony and I, is becoming more of a Q&A instead of like a presentation. Because they want to know what they want to know about, right? The various coaches from the area. Is this a widespread thing? I get the sense that, you know, the NFL has a lot of outreach going on. This seems like a pretty...
I'm not sure. You see there's a lot of coaches' clinics during the offseason around the country where you have guest speakers.
Right.
But I don't know of one like this.
That brings you into basically a practice setting and
has the whole staff.
Right. Everything from trainers on up to the head man and given that kind of unfettered access. Today, we will talk about projecting, looking at the Jag season ahead. And they certainly beefed up on the defensive side of the ball. We just heard Allen Robinson in one of Jordan's updates, who did not come back in the door to wave goodbye to us again, by the way, that I've noticed anyway. That delay is strong. However, Allen Robinson is saying this defense is going to be very much improved. So today we ask you, who will be the defensive MVP for the Jacksonville Jaguars? You got potentially five new stars. I think Tayshaun Gibson is going to be a popular selection. Malik Jackson is going to be a popular selection. I think Paul Posluski could be a candidate to get a vote or two.
Miles Jack.
Yeah, that was Miles. hey, look, it's okay. Let's get Paul right, and he'll roll with it from that point on. So we'll talk about defensive MVPs a little bit today. Clifton Brown's going to join us from CSN Mid-Atlantic. You know Clifton?
I don't know him personally, but he's been around.
He has been around.
This is a guy who covered the Pat Riley Knicks.
Is that right?
For the New York Times.
Hey, wait a minute. That's not that long ago, pal. All right?
Well, that's when I was in college.
Says a guy who was at the sports bar watching the White Bronco interrupt my NBA Finals. Damn it. Back in
94.
That's correct. Game 5. The Knicks won that one. That was it.
Friday night, I think.
Was it? I don't know. I was at a bar, so it might have been. Then again, it could have been Wednesday. Tony, I really don't know. Back in when I was about 24 years old or so, something like that, 25 years old, back in the day. Anything catch your eye from the yesterday's OTA that you're allowed to talk about?
Sure, sure. This is all based on what the head man said. He sort of called out the defense yesterday, and I liked it. He said, hey, the defense had probably their most productive day. In our meeting today, we talked about more precision, and they needed it. They needed a good day. I like it. He also talked about Jackson and Gibson saying, hey, they've come in, and they've helped other guys become accountable, but not as much as we need them to be. that's pretty damn good stuff.
Yeah, setting the bar a little bit higher.
And to me, it's like, okay, we've talked all offseason since the new guys have come in how there's going to be a new bar. And to me, this is this was evidence of that. So I kind of like it because
is this Gus breaking form a little bit just because he's always been so, you know, in the past, his criticism of the guy has been he's solid. And then Gus last year infamously said, and you guys know if I say he's solid, that means he's probably not doing so well.
I think it is breaking form because he's just a lot more confident and he knows he's got some veterans. And if he says he always says, I want to be honest and stuff. You know, sometimes he wouldn't be because Marquise Lee didn't want to hear the truth.
Right.
And so I just think, I don't know if he's not sending a message or anything, but I hope the tone continues.
Marquise in a good place right now. I mean, it's in a good place in terms of health, which is a major step for him.
Well, the benefit for him is A, he's out there, and B, as they're bringing Robinson and Hearns along very slowly, that means a ton
more
of
reps.
Reps for Lee. Story in tomorrow's Times Union on him, shameless plug. But, you know, like Alan said yesterday, that if Marquise is healthy, he brings a different pace to this offense. That's obviously downfield. So they haven't had to decide, okay, what do we do with all these guys if they're all healthy?
Right. Haven't had that problem yet.
You know, and so if Marquise can make it to week one in one piece, we'll see how they use him.
That'd be fun. All right. He is Ryan O'Halloran, Florida Times Union. Fat Tony is here. I'm Mike Dempsey. We got a lot going on. It is week three of our endeavor to project and cover every team that comes up on the Jaguar schedule in the order that they appear. We've talked Green Bay. We've talked San Diego the last couple weeks. Clifton Brown, CSN Mid-Atlantic will join us coming up in a few minutes to talk about the week three opponent for the Jaguars, the Baltimore Ravens. Talking about a lot of change on offense. Joe Flacco coming back from a torn ACL. Steve Smith coming back from a torn Achilles. Breshad Perriman missed his entire rookie season with an injury.
Forsett was hurt.
Forsett was banged up last year. They draft a running back in Kenneth Dixon. Tony and I talked about him a little bit yesterday. Mike Wallace gets picked up from Minnesota, which looks like a good fit with the big arm of Joe Flacco. Some changing faces on defense. We'll get into all that and where the Raiders stand after a down season for that franchise. Again, question of the day, who will be the Jaguars' defensive MVP in 2016? Tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, at Ryan O'Halloran. Also, jump on the text line driven by Duval Ford, 641-1010. And the Jaguars Today Facebook page is open for business as well. Metro Rooter brings you the show every Wednesday. It's Jaguars Today. We'll come back, look at the Jags' Week 3 opponent, the Baltimore Ravens, in a moment on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
14 seconds of play, 3rd and 15. Jags from their own 40. Straight drop, 3-man rush. Blake steps up, fires it to the side. That is caught by Julius Thomas, but the clock's going to run. 7 seconds. They're going to have to spike it.
That's it.
Just to get a long field goal off. Can they get it spiked? Doesn't look like Blake falls down. The play is alive. And now he's thrown to the ground, but as a face mask, that would make for an untimed down. This is a 53-yarder from the left hash. Jason Myers for the win. Carson Tinker snapped it. Brian Anger will hold it. The snap and holder good. He kicks it up. This kick is good. This kick is
wow.
Good. The Jaguars have beaten the Ravens on a 53-yard field goal from Jason Myers. Are you kidding me? Jags winning in Baltimore.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
What do you mean, are you kidding me? That's why they draw it up, Tony. Don't they draw it up? He fell down. The play's still alive.
Oh, my gosh. It's my favorite call of the whole year.
Hey, we will take them any way we can get them right now. And hopefully I'll take 16 of them just like that this year. Jags, Ravens, Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, Ryan O'Halloran here with you. We got Clifton Brown, CSN Mid-Atlantic, covers those Baltimore Ravens. An uncharacteristically bad season for the Ravens earned them a top 10 pick, number 6 overall. They grabbed Ronnie Stanley out of Notre Dame to start their draft off this year. Clifton, kind enough to join us this morning. Talk a little off-season Ravens football. What's up, Clifton? How are you?
I'm doing fine, guys. How are you?
We're well, good, man. We're well. Hey, how bad does that particular, you know, Keystone Cops situation loss for the Ravens stick in the craw of the Raven fan base up there?
Yeah, well, in a season full of crazy losses for the Ravens, that may have been the worst one. yeah, kind of indicative of their whole year. They're certainly hoping this season coming up to get some revenge, you know, on the Jaguars this time in Jacksonville. And then, you know, obviously hoping that they can win some games like that next season rather than losing them. Seemed like crazy stuff was happening to the Ravens all season long, and that was a prime example.
Yeah, and Clifton, look, you lose your quarterback during the season. That's going to be a big part of things. Joe Flacco, I think, has been, you know, the whole debate, is he elite or not? He's pretty damn good. Oh, let's put it that way. Where is he in his return from a torn ACL?
The Ravens are really encouraged, thinking that he'll be ready for the start of training camp. He didn't participate in the first OTA session they had. Of course, they're not allowed to have one this week. They get back on the field next week. He's not expected to be there. But they think Flacco will be ready the end of July by the first week of training camp. And even if he's not, they feel that he'll be around for most of the camp. Not going to play a lot, if at all, during the preseason, but certainly by week one. They'll think Flacco will be 100%.
You brought up the canceled OTAs. I want to go back to that for a second. What were they thinking?
You're assuming they were thinking. yeah, I mean, they're certainly, John Harbaugh took 100% blame. And, yeah, really, there's no excuse for it. They got caught, so they have to take the punishment and the fine. So, you know, it's one of those things, I'm sure if they had a do-over, they would do things differently, but they don't. I think that, you know, in the long run, it's not going to have an impact on the season one way or the other, but certainly the Ravens would rather be on the field this week rather than, you know, having a forced week off. So, you know, they don't have anybody to blame but themselves, so they have to deal with it.
Clifton, as Mike mentioned, the Ravens in a position this year in the draft they're not used to being in, picking there at number six, but they get Ronnie Stanley. Where do you expect him to start for this team? Is he going to take over that role at left tackle from Eugene Monroe early, or are they looking to move him inside maybe for the first year?
Yeah, it all depends on what they do with Monroe. I mean, Ronnie Stanley's going to start. He'll either be starting at left tackle if they get rid of Monroe, or left guard if they keep Monroe. I think the decision on Monroe is still recovering from a shoulder surgery he had late last year. So once he's back on the field, I think the Ravens are going to determine, you know, how much they think Monroe is going to help them this year. He's had so much trouble staying healthy. But if he looks 100%, you know, they feel like the five best guys would probably be keeping Monroe at left tackle and playing Stanley at least for a year at left guard. But if Monroe looks like he's still can't get over the injury bug, and, you know, the Ravens can definitely save some cap room by getting rid of Monroe, then if they decide to do that, Stanley's going to start a tackle.
Clifton Brown here with us, CSN Mid-Atlantic. You know, speaking of Eugene Monroe, he's become, I guess, the NFL's leading advocate for the use of medical marijuana, Clifton. How does the organization look at that? Do they care? You know, sometimes that subject matter still gets people uptight in National Football League front offices.
Yeah, I think the Ravens would rather Monroe not be so outspoken about it, for sure. But I don't think that's going to be a factor in whether they keep him or not. You know, if they decide that he looks like he's going to have a better year than he's had the past couple of years, they'll still keep him on the team and deal with him being the spokesperson on that issue. But, yeah, certainly they'd rather think that rather him not be so outspoken. It's just another thing, you know, they feel a potential distraction maybe for him, and maybe something that, you know, actually, he doesn't need to be dealing with right now, but it's clear that Monroe has a lot of strong opinions on this issue, and it is something serious. I mean, you know, we know some of the, well, a lot of the problems so many players have had post-career, and Monroe, a guy who's been injured a lot, definitely feels that, you know, medical marijuana should be something that players aren't punished for. I don't think it's an issue that's going to go away, and yeah, he definitely has been not shy about speaking out about it.
Yeah, and look, I think society's headed that way too, Clifton. He's probably ahead of the curve as far as I'm concerned. I just thought it was interesting because the NFL is still, for the most part, a very buttoned-up organization, so I appreciate your take on that. Go ahead, Ron.
Hey, Clifton, interesting situation at running back. Forsett coming off the injury, then young guys, Buck Allen, Taliaferro, Kenneth Dixon. Of those four, who do you think emerges as the number one guy, and who do you think the Ravens want to emerge?
I still think Forsett will be the guy, and that they would prefer for Forsett to be the number one guy. However, they'd also prefer Forsett not to have to carry the ball, you know, 18, 20 times a game. You know, being a 30-year-old running back, they feel that Forsett might be best effective now if they could reduce some of his touches. And certainly if Forsett still shows that he's starting to slide, which I don't think he has so far. I mean, he came to OTAs in great shape. So that job, someone's going to have to take it from him. But then, yeah, they have a lot of depth. And I think it's going to be interesting, even if Forsett is a starter, then who's his backup? Will it be Buck Allen? Kenneth Dixon is getting a lot of attention as a rookie who had huge numbers in college, both as a runner and as a receiver. Lorenzo Taliaferro, sort of a forgotten guy because he's been injured the last 2 years, parts of the year. And then Terrence West and Trent Richardson, still guys on the roster. So they're extremely deep at receiver, but I do think Forsett's going to emerge as a starter. The question is, you know, who's he sharing a load with? And one of those guys maybe later in the year to plan him or be getting as many carries as him.
Gotcha.
Clifton, we talked about Joe Flacco. The team expects him to be back and ready probably by the beginning of training camp. What about the wide receivers? The injury to Steve Smith, who decided he was going to retire last year, then after the injury said, well, I'll give it one more go. Don't want to go out that way. Dealing with his return and Breshad Perriman, their first-round pick from last year that didn't see the field at all. Where are those two guys as far as getting back on the field for the Ravens?
Perriman is already on the field, was at OTAs last week, looked really good running, said he's not even thinking about the knee. So, you know, Ravens will keep their fingers crossed that he's going to have a healthy year, and in one way kind of give them two first-round picks because he was a first-rounder last year, Perriman, who, as you mentioned, never played. As far as Steve Smith, yeah, he's still not ready to get back on the field. The Ravens can care less whether Smith is ready for the start of training camp or even the preseason. At this point in his career, I don't think Steve Smith's going to forget how to run pass patterns or get open. The main thing is making sure that Achilles is 100% healthy, and he's still the type of guy that he's always been who can really hurt you running after the catch and still has that same burst, you know, in tight spaces. So we won't know about those things until Steve gets on the field and starts running. I don't know if he's going to be ready for the opening of camp, but reports about how he's recovering from the Achilles are good. And you know what a competitor Steve Smith is. If he can't come all the way back, it won't be because, you know, he didn't work hard enough. He's, you know, really attacking the rehab, and the Ravens are optimistic that they're going to get one more good season out of Steve Smith.
Jacksonville hosts Baltimore week 3 of the upcoming NFL season. Clifton Brown here for a couple more minutes talking Ravens football with us on 1010XL. Clifton, as you look at the roster right now, where do the biggest holes still remain?
Well, inside linebacker would certainly be one. You know, Darryl Smith, the guy who played in Jacksonville for a long time.
Yep.
You know, Ravens let him go, didn't draft an inside linebacker. So who's going to start, you know, inside linebacker next to C.J. Mosley? That's definitely a hole. Ravens have addressed some of the depth at cornerback, but who's going to be the starter opposite Jimmy Smith? Because Darius Webb is switching from corner to safety. That's certainly a hole. Also, who's going to start? We talked about, you know, left guard. If they do get rid of Monroe, who's going to replace Kelechi Osemele at left guard, who they lost to the Raiders in free agency? Those would be some of the big holes, bigger holes right now for the Ravens, those three spots.
You mentioned inside linebacker. How about on the edges? What do Suggs and Doomerville have left at this point?
Well, I think Doomerville has at least a couple more good years if he has another running mate as a pass rusher. I think Doomerville was really hurt by the fact that Suggs was hurt last year. It made it a lot easier for teams to double-team Doomerville. You know, the Ravens, so they loaded up on pass rushers in the draft, you know, really tried to attack that position. Not once, but twice, but really three guys with Kamale Correa taking him. And then they also, even with some free agents, Victor Oshie is a guy who they picked up as a free agent they think might be able to help them as a pass rusher. So, yeah, if the Ravens feel that if Doomerville gets some more help, that he'll be fine. As far as Suggs, you know, his second Achilles injury in his career at age 33, I think it might be unrealistic for the Ravens to expect Suggs to be a double-digit sack guy. But if he can be a guy who certainly can still help them against the run, you know, help their pass rush some, and then get some support, they think he can still help for another year. But Dumerville, I think, will be okay. Suggs is a guy I'd be most curious about, whether he will be, you know, the same type of player we're used to seeing, or at his age, coming off another Achilles injury, if you really see a drop-off.
We've been talking about the Ravens here for the past 10 minutes or so and haven't mentioned their biggest free agent acquisition, that being Eric Weddle. Why was that such a priority for the Ravens going into this offseason to try to go get Weddle specifically for that free safety spot? And what are the expectations for him as far as fitting into this defense?
Yeah, well, they made so many mistakes in the secondary, just coverage mistakes. You know, it's one thing to get burned by, you know, great receiver like Antonio Brown or A.J. Green, but when you just have guys blowing assignments and leaving people wide open in secondary, that's inexcusable. And that happened with the Ravens too much last year. So they feel Weddle not only has a lot of left as a player, but as a leader of the secondary, can put guys in the right spots to make plays. They just feel it was something they badly needed. And, yeah, I think he could be really important for the Ravens. Weddle, you know, wanted to play for a contender, and the fact that he chose the Ravens indicates to me that he thinks the Ravens are going to have a bounce back year, and he can certainly help them do that if he plays the way he has most of the year. So, you know, Weddle, if he can stay healthy, you know, Webb makes a transition from corner to safety, that would give them two veteran safeties all of a sudden who, you know, won't be easy to fool and can help, you know, the rest of their defense, you know, make some plays and get some more turnovers and be the type of defense they'll need to be to get back in the playoffs.
All right, Clifton Brown, CSN, Mid-Atlantic. It'll be interesting because the Jags certainly, I think, would have had interest in Weddle had they not secured the services of Tashaun Gibson, but we'll find out if each team made the right move when they match up in Week 3, where Clifton, I'm guessing, a more conventional ending to the game. Not sure who's going to win it, but we'll see what happens Week 3. We'll look forward to seeing you then. Thanks for the time this morning, buddy.
Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
You got it. Clifton Brown, CSN, Mid-Atlantic. That's a team with a lot of change. We talked about off the air that wide receiver core, and you got into it a little bit there, Tony, with Clifton. Steve Smith, another major injury, and that's a guy we saw at the Super Bowl as well. Moving around fine. Now, you're not exactly running pass patterns on the floor of Radio Row, but, you know, he does have that competitive spirit, and I agree with Clifton Brown. If he doesn't come all the way back, it's not for a lack of putting himself in the right position. Mike Wallace added that offense. Kamar Aiken played very well for them last year, kind of the unsung hero of that offense last year. They added Ben Watson at tight end from New Orleans, who had a nice season last year. So they may have more weapons around Flacco in the passing game than they've ever had before. We'll see if Flacco is able to take advantage of those as he comes back off a torn ACL and maybe not ready to hit the field right at the beginning of training camp. We'll have to keep an eye on that one
as well. Sure, and ran out of time, but it's a story that'll be developing over the course of the next couple months, whether Keenan Reynolds actually makes that roster too with that Ravens team as he's making the switch from quarterback to wide receiver.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit yesterday, kind of an interesting story to follow along, particularly here in a Navy town.
Well, we forgot about maybe their biggest offseason signing, Trent Richardson.
Biggest in terms of
literally
sheer mass.
Literally biggest.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Yesterday, I did my first rankings of the season for fantasy football for one of the Football Diehards magazines, and we had to rank 70 running backs.
Holy cow.
All right, your top 70 running backs, right? So you're going three deep on several teams.
Toby Gerhardt, number three.
Trent Richardson. Trent and Toby were not even a glimmer in my eye yesterday. All right. Coming up, we'll talk tight end. We'll talk Julius Thomas as he spoke with the media yesterday following the Jaguars OTA practice. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union. Fat Tony is here. We're back at the 1010XL World Headquarters this morning on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Phone lines open to you right now at 641-1010. You want to talk Jaguar football, you can jump on the phone lines or the text line driven by Duval Ford. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
The timing has definitely improved. I think that, you know, me and Blake have a much better relationship, much better understanding of each other. And then, most importantly, we have more reps. I think that most good quarterback receiving position duos have played together for a while, so it's kind of important.
Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
listening to? Do I know this? Should I know
it's,
this?
It's Tessie, Dropkick Murphys, right?
Tessie?
Yeah, it's a Boston song. It's why you wouldn't know it.
I had an Aunt Tessie. It's a true story. What is Tessie short for?
I don't know.
Teresa. That's what it's got to be, right? Got to be.
Guess.
You don't know?
I was trying to go through my Rolodex.
Of names? I did have an Aunt Tessie. They're pretty good, considering they're from Boston, actually. I don't mind that. Well, there's not much good that comes out of that place. We all know that. Come on. Oh, Howard, how was Julius Thomas yesterday?
He was good. This was our first time getting him since the end of last season. And a lot of questions recapping, okay, what did he do, looking back on last year and looking forward. So, obviously, when he gets going, he's pretty good.
All right, well, let's bang it out. Let's hear what he had to say yesterday. We all recall a year ago, or maybe slightly less than a year ago, everyone who had laid eyes on Julius Thomas proclaimed him probably the best player on the Jaguars roster, the offseason MVP, that kind of thing. The guy really looked the part and then, you know, broke the hand, got off to a slow start. It was tough to catch up because the wide receivers were rolling so well. So let's see where Julius Thomas stands right now. Talked about the defense early on with some of these new acquisitions really pushing this Jaguar offense to improve.
I think that one of the biggest things you notice is the sense of urgency. I think that, you know, on that defensive side of the ball, you know, they're looking to become a better defense. And you can see it out here at practice every day. They're pushing each other. They're pushing us as an offense. And one thing they've been preaching is just being accountable. Everybody has to be in the right spot, all 11, on defense for it to be a successful play. And you see those guys putting in that work and that attention to detail.
Sense of urgency is a good way to put it because this defense knows they can't wait until week one to, like, start getting it together. They have to be ready right away because a lot of jobs depend on it.
Yeah, Green Bay rolling in with a high-powered offense, and then San Diego. So you're going to have two of your biggest challenges right out of the gates.
Yeah, and the questions about whether or not it was a disappointing season for a guy like Julius Thomas last year, right? I mean, the injury, obviously he didn't get started the way he wanted to, but still wound up with basically 500 yards receiving, five touchdowns for this football team. It's not a bad year from a tight end perspective, but he was asked about his year one takeaway from a team perspective.
You know, I think I saw a team that never gave up, a team that was going to compete no matter what the situation was. A lot to hang our hats on at the end of that season, but also a lot of glaring things that kept us from winning games. You know, ball security, execution, how we executed in the red area, third down. If you want to be an elite team, you have to be good in those categories. So that's probably some of the main aspects that we're focusing on offensively.
Not to dredge up bad memories, Ryan, but I know we've had these discussions late in the season last year and after the season ended. Do you feel that? I thought for the most part that held true. Did you feel like the last couple of weeks, once the playoffs were a mathematical impossibility, that the Jags had a, whether it's a natural reaction or not, kind of took their foot off the gas a little bit?
Yeah, there was a letdown after the Atlanta loss. Yeah, they beat Indy, then lost to Atlanta, and that was pretty much it. And you saw in their play, New Orleans and Houston were just terrible. I mean, they put up some points on offense, but they're sort of empty. So I think that's probably what he's referring to.
As a general rule, in the 3 years that the Jags have had under Gus Bradley, do you agree or disagree that they basically have been a team that fights, you know, to the end, regardless of the situation? Because people hear that and say, well, they're professional athletes, they should do that. We understand the reality of human nature in any organization. Not everybody does that, right? Do you think that for the most part that Gus Bradley's had them play hard despite the fact that they haven't had much chance to head to the postseason in those years?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that first year they sort of limped to the finish line because they ran out of gas. I mean, they're relying on a lot of young guys. The last two games of last year should have a very sour taste in their mouth because you just did not see a want to, in my opinion. Guys are just sort of cruising to the end of the season.
But overall,
those were the only two times where you thought,
gotcha.
Okay, they're not tuning him out, but they're also like making some business decisions.
Right, right. All right, let's get a call or two in here, and we'll get back to
calls.
Julius Thomas. Yes, some calls. Harold is on the west side, going to lead us off this morning here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Harold.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up, buddy?
Not much. You know, I was telling this call screener I listen to the show a lot. I don't get a chance to call in as much as I'd like, so I really haven't had a chance to talk to you guys too much since the draft. But honestly, I like some of the acquisitions that we got. Of course, nothing needs to be said for Ramsey and guys like Jack. But that being said, my take on Gus Bradley is a little bit different. And I'll be honest, while the wins haven't been there, one thing I do have faith in Gus Bradley and Dave Caldwell in is that they can turn things around in a season. We see what they did with the offensive acquisitions they went out and got last year. So if that's a sign of anything, the defense should be better, and obviously wins should come. You know, football is a funny game, and I'll be honest, I could see them having a 7-9 type season where I've seen enough to be okay with them keeping Gus Bradley because, like I said, the defense plays well this year. I think you're starting to see a very solid connection between Gus Bradley and Dave Caldwell, and I don't know that I'd be so quick to break that up.
All right, Harold, thank you.
Well, I think that's what ownership is banking on is by all accounts, they made the right hire with Greg Olsen last year to turn the offense around. Can the promotion of Todd Wash spark a defensive turnaround that can make them competitive?
You hear, and I'm not trying to put words in people's mouths, but I'm trying to read between the lines. You hear defensive players that have spoken out in the last few weeks. I think Paul Posluszny even, Tony, to us. I don't think it was as a slight to Bob Babbage, but as they've said, you know, if Todd Wash is there, there's going to be a heightened intensity,
sure,
right? And that this is something that he brings to the table. You're right, Ryan. Greg Olsen, let's give that guy credit. Give the staff credit for bringing him in and bringing in the only guy that ran an offense rated worse than the Jaguars the previous season. But they saw beyond the raw numbers, and they saw what he was capable of doing and working with a young quarterback like Blake Bortles and what they got out of that offense. If you feel that can be done on the defensive side, they certainly put the personnel in place this year to make a big move.
Yeah, and you know, Ryan, you're out there at the OTAs right now. Have you noticed any difference in – even if it's just the intensity on the defensive side of the ball with what they're doing with Wash being the guy now?
You can see so far just a lot more communication from player to player. You know, you haven't, you know, like Todd is sort of saving that for later. But, you know, that obviously means he likes what he sees. So what you're seeing, like yesterday, there was one play during red zone where after the play it was Posluszny and Grotz talking, and then they spread that message around. You see Gibson talking after every play to his guys. So I think that's what where that's the self-accountability is going to, you know, help everybody.
Let's get Jerome up on the west side next. 641-1010, the number. Good morning, Jerome.
Good morning. Good morning. How y'all doing this morning?
Good, buddy. What's up?
With all this hype coming around, like, every year, but this is, like, probably the biggest hype we had in a while. What would be your expectations for this ball club to win? I mean, like 500? Less than 500 is a disappointment? Or, I mean, what do you see? I mean, I can take the playoffs out of there. It's just, I guess, over 500 or under 500?
All I know what I'm doing is I'm taking the first weekend of January off because they're going to have a damn bye.
16-0 or 15-1? You think they get caught late?
14-2 because they're going to lose a game at midseason, and then they're going to rest the starters.
Right,
in the last game.
One won't matter.
Yeah.
Right. So look, in all honesty, Jerome, we talk about this in some sense every single day.
Yeah.
What are they capable of doing? Well, I think they're capable of winning 11 or 12 games. I really do. I'm not projecting that they will. I think that's at the short end of the bell curve, right? That percentage is very low, but I think that's within their capabilities. I think they're capable of winning, going 4-12, quite frankly. How can you feel that they're not? They had a great offense last year, or a significantly improved offense last year. A lot of holes on defense. Who's to say they're not going to have some key injuries on the other side of the football? So I think the range is wide. I think the likely range is probably in that 7-9 win range.
And I think, look, last year I don't think I would have put the high end of things for this football team at 11 or 12. I probably would have capped it at somewhere around 9, right, going into the season. If everything went right for them, maybe this is a 9-7 football team last year. But I expected them to be better than 5. And
right.
The results you felt like, especially when you had coming off the win against Baltimore and the win against Buffalo and the way they played the Jets, and everything was out in front of them after they blow out Indianapolis. And it's like, this team has a real opportunity in the last 4 weeks of this football season to make something happen. And it all just kind of fell apart in the last month of the year. So it feels like it wound up on the kind of the back end of the middle of what you expected out of this football team last year, especially compared to where they were when they actually got that fifth win. So I think it's reasonable as a fan to expect this team to win 8 games this year. I think that's a completely reasonable expectation. I think if you're going to be somebody that's like, they got to win 10, that's a little on the extreme side to me, but I think eight is very reasonable.
Well, Tony, as we've said last year to us, they should have been a 7 or 8 win team as right. it were. So 8 wins is not, in our eyes, we're talking about a play or two here or there, would have had you at 7 last year.
Yeah.
So you're only adding a win, maybe 2 wins to your total. So I do think that range is very doable. None of it matters. We're all going to sit here and give predictions, and they'll fluctuate depending on the health of the roster and all these different factors that come into play. And then if they get off to a great start and beat Green Bay, our predictions are going to get a little more bullish. If they lose to Green Bay badly and then you see Phillip Rivers and company coming up, then maybe we're going to say, wow, we overestimated again. It all comes down to how they play on Sunday afternoons, right?
Yeah.
Not that we say here, but I do think – I know there's going to be somebody out there saying, Dempsey said they're going to win 12 games. No, maybe 1 in 1,000 times you play out the season, but I do think that's around the upper limit of their range. If things really fell into place, they got lucky with health, maybe a few breaks with health on their opponents' rosters and so on.
Couldn't have more this year than they had last year.
I don't expect 12, but I do think, you know, 8, 9 wins is not an unreasonable expectation if you're a Jag fan looking at it like that.
I'm sticking with 16.
All right. I'm out of 14.
All right. More seriously, the night the schedule came out, I went through it right away, and I had 5.
5.
Okay, they've added a couple pieces on defense in the draft. Maybe they can, you know, I have it as my curve is the 6 to 8.
Okay, so you're like a 7-win guy,
yeah,
basically, right now. I don't think that's all that far off, and I may be a little bit more bullish, thinking 8, 9. Right now, that's kind of where I'm at, in that 8-9 range. But again, I look at last year, play here or play there, they should have been a 7-9 team. And had they been a 7-9 team, I think everyone's expectation is, wow, that 7-9 team that added a lot of significant personnel on the defensive side, added Chris Ivory, fortified the offensive line, they should make another jump this year. So that's kind of how I'm counting on it playing out this year. We got to take a break. Coming back, this date in football, the Honda Drive around the NFL, more of your calls, more from Julius Thomas. And just more Jag talk on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, let's get to this date in football history. Oh, did you notice it's June? Happy June 1st, everybody. This date in football history, famous birthdays, including 1933, Alan the Horse Amici. Only made it to 55 years young. Passed away in 1988, was best known for this play.
Line of scrimmage. Flanker to the right. The ends are tight. Unitas takes. He gives to Amici, and the ball game is over.
The Colts are the champions of the world. 1958 NFL championship game. First overtime game in NFL history. 23-17. The Colts over the New York Giants. Alan Amici, a four-time Pro Bowler, and with the game-winning carry in the first ever overtime. Not a Hall of Famer, though, in Canton, Ohio. Larry Centers, born in the state. Most receptions in a year for Larry Centers. Anybody, what you got?
118.
118. That's a good guess. It's a little high.
I was going to go 109.
101. 101. Matt Forte just set the record like 2 years ago, right? I want to say it was like 115-ish, 110?
Something like that.
I don't know. But Centers held it for a while. Set it in 1995, a three-time Pro Bowler, including that season with the Arizona Cardinals. Were they the Phoenix
102
Cardinals?
102 for Matt Forte.
102. So he just broke it then. 102 for Forte. Nice call there, Tyler. He's right on top of it. Turns 48 years old today, does Larry Centers. Shaner was born on this date. Shane Matthews, friend of the network, friend of the station, and a former Gator quarterback. You've heard him on plenty on the Frank Frangie Show and others over the years. Played with various teams in the National Football League. Happy 46th to Shane Matthews, and one of the pride of the Miami Hurricanes football program, Santana Moss. How many Pro Bowls for Santana Moss?
One.
One. Good call. Former Redskin fan here.
Former Redskin writer.
There you go.
One of the best guys I've ever covered.
Santana Moss, yes. Excellent. Yes. Tell us why.
He's
accessible.
Accessible, insight, and when times were bad, he was not in it for the team. He was that first locker right when he came in the door. Great.
Gotta love those go-to guys in the locker room. And Santana Moss, 37 years young today. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL. Brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Well, Philadelphia Eagles quarterback Sam Bradford are not the only QB unhappy about the draft decisions of their football teams. Los Angeles Rams quarterback Nick Foles skipping the team's OTAs after participating in the team's offseason program up until they selected Jared Goff with the number one overall pick in the draft. Since then, Foles hasn't been at any of the team's workouts or OTAs. Foles cannot be fined for his absence since this part of the offseason, however, is voluntary. Defensive back Walter Thurman, who played all of last season with the Philadelphia Eagles, has announced that he is retiring from the National Football League at the age of 28 after a six-year career. Thurman, according to Adam Schefter, said that he doesn't want to play football any longer and instead wants to pursue other opportunities.
Yeah, good for him.
Well, hopefully people won't pigeonhole this Mike Florio into he's afraid to get injured. This is another black day for the National Football League. Guys are retiring early. This guy just wasn't very good. He decided to move on.
Yeah, and you know what? Maybe it's a case of he's made a little money. He's put it aside. And it doesn't necessarily have to be CTE, but it is a violent game. And I do think that's a factor with these guys.
Three teams in 3 years. He's been at three different positions on those teams, too. He played corner. He played slot. He played safety last year after Philadelphia just didn't have anybody else to play safety.
And oh, by the way, it's June 1st. Any callers, any suitors for Walter Thurman at this point, right? So
the other guy you mentioned is Foles, which is interesting. There's no market for Nick Foles.
So
if I'm him, just show up, be a good soldier, and if a team sees that and team gets banged up during camp, maybe they will bring you along.
Right.
Bring you on.
He got it. They gave him a roster bonus, pretty sizable one this offseason. Was it like $6 million?
$6 million, yeah.
It's a pretty sizable roster bonus for Nick Foles, Tony. They're talking
his base is like 1.7, so he's getting like $7 million this year, $7.5 million, nothing maybe.
But I mean, look, they already kind of felt like Case Keenum would be the bridge if they needed one to whatever rookie quarterback they selected. At the time, they didn't know that they'd own the number one pick in the draft, that they'd be able to trade up and get Jared Goff. But, boy, I don't know if I'd want to pay Nick Foles $7.75 million to ride the bench this year when you can go out and get a Brian Hoyer-esque player for $4 million.
Sure.
Right? And I understand Hoyer's drawbacks, but Foles has got his own set of drawbacks to go with it. Talk about one-hit wonders, and his name did come up yesterday. Had that one great season. What are you, 27 touchdowns and two picks.
Yep.
That's phenomenal. Greatest TD to interception ratio probably ever for a quarterback throwing 25 or more, I would think. Maybe 20 or more. Anybody ever had that high a, you know, that's pretty, you know, like a 14-1 practically.
Right, that's crazy.
That is crazy numbers. Let's get Nick in Pittsburgh. He's a devoted Jaguar fan up in the Steel City where life must be hell, but we appreciate him checking in with us on the regular on 1010XL. Hello, Nick. How are you, buddy?
Oh, sorry. Hey, how's it going?
What's up, Nick?
Not much. I was going to talk about Blake Bortles. I was just kind of wondering, what does he need to do, let's just say this season, to improve his game? I was thinking maybe not throw as lot of interceptions. And then my second thing is my prediction for the Jaguars this year as far as record, I'll say 9-7.
9-7. Hey, let me ask you, are you getting ready to graduate high school?
Yeah, Friday.
That's cool. Congratulations. I saw you you mentioned that on social media. So congrats to you.
Thank you. And you think you could follow me?
Do I think I could follow you on Twitter?
That's his graduation present.
Hey, you know what? If that would make you happy, Nick, I'll give you a follow on Twitter. All right? Tweet at me so I have it in front and center, and I'll give you a follow back.
He doesn't ask for much.
You know, it's not worth anything. You don't get
no. There's no cash.
Others may stop following you when they see that I follow you. You know that, right?
Yeah, I know. It's all good.
All right.
All right, Nick.
Take it easy, brother. We appreciate it.
Yeah, at least you're not blocking him.
Happy graduation. Nah, Nick's a good kid, man.
He's a
Jaguar fan. Don't piss me off, Nick. Just kidding.
I called into sports talk radio when I was in high school.
Did you?
I did.
I called into Joe and Lamb show once. Lamb at Large, they called it. But Dave would refer to that as Dave show, I believe. He's like, what do you mean Joe and Dave show? I called in the morning after the Yankees finish off their sweep of San Diego in the 98 World Series. But I used to call Coward show. Coward had a local show in St. Augustine. It was the Pat and Joe Sports Show with Pat Paolini, who still he owns the Mardi Gras Sports Bar. Free plug for you, Patrick, down in St. Augustine. But I was their second ever caller on their program. I used to work when I was in college, I used to work at this little gas station. I'd sit there at night reading the sports page and listening to AM radio, and I thought, this is the greatest thing in the world. There's a local sports show that I can call and get right on with. And then little by little, I insinuated myself into Joe's life. I became kind of his radio stalker.
Yeah. to Nick's call.
Yes.
Bortles, I mean.
That good. There still was a question in there.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, the key, Nick, is he can he cut down the interceptions? We've talked about this a lot.
Particularly the critical ones.
Yeah, I mean, combined his fumbles and his interceptions, he had 5 red zone turnovers last year. And I think the next step for him is, can he build a lead? I mean, Tampa Bay last year, New Orleans last year, the team got down by 3 touchdowns before the offense finally got going. Can he come out in the first quarter where they're the worst offensive team in the league last year? Can he come out raring to go?
Start fast
and then sustain it instead of, okay, well, we better get going. We're down 21-6.
Do you think the red zone interceptions are worse or they worse? I think they're worse when you're backed up against your own red zone.
You know, there's, you know, it's 6-1, half dozen of the other.
They're both bad,
because
right?
You're give, you know, in, you know, when you're in a position to score, you're giving up points. When you do it backed up, you're giving up points.
I guess I just felt like with this roster, they had the ability to overcome some missed scoring opportunities, right, that they could capitalize on other, and they could still put points on the board, even if they screwed up some opportunities. Whereas the defense, man, I mean, they're already up against it, and to put teams in point-blank territory or to just hand them points on a pick six, to me, those are the ones I'd rather see him cut those down. I'd rather see him cut them down across the board. You know, cut them in half would be phenomenal. Even if you dropped, heck, would you take 10 touchdowns off the top? 10's a lot to get 9 interceptions off the pile.
That would be 25-9.
25-9.
I mean, take it.
As long as the offense is generating a running game, as long as you're still generating points and Myers is doing his job and converting a high percentage of his field goal opportunities.
I mean, if you go
30-12 is my target this year. That's what I'm hoping.
I was
going to
say 27-13.
Yeah, 30-12 would be just phenomenal.
Get above the 2-1 ratio.
Right on. All right, Nick, thank you for the call. Give me a hit up on Twitter, and I'll give you a follow back. Happy graduation.
You asked for if Nick Foles is, 27-2 ratio?
Best ratio for a guy throwing 20 or more?
That is the best ratio, 13.5. The next best would be Josh McCown. Remember, he had that hot run with the Bears in 2013.
For like half a season.
Yeah, he was 13-1, so he was just below the 13.5. The next best guy was Damon Heward, 11-1 back in 2006. Tom Brady, back in 2010, 36-4. Aaron Rodgers has 2 appearances in top 10, as well as David Garrard back in 2007.
What was Garrard, 15-3?
18-3.
18-3, a short of them 3 right there. They all went to Reggie Williams. That's how he got to 10, I think, that season. All right. Was that the season he got to 10? I want to say, or was that the season Mercedes had 10?
I think that's the Mercedes year.
I think so, too. All right. We got to take a timeout. We'll come back. A little more from Julius Thomas. If you'd like to get on board, 641-1010. We'll check out the text line driven by Duval Ford. And on and on and on. By the way, Batman says, call me crazy. I think Sin'Derek Marks is going to be in full beast mode this year. And .. steal the show. Got to get a few of those references in every morning. Love to see you out there, Batman, and all the rest of you out there in Jaguar land. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday for all size plumbing jobs, residential, commercial, industrial plumbing, you name it. If it has to do with plumbing, Metro Rooter has the solution. Same day service, weekends included. Part of the reason why Metro Rooter has been serving Jacksonville so well since 1978. The right people and the right equipment, that's a big part of it. MetroRooter.com online. Call 695-1911. 695-1911. If you want to do away with your plumbing issues, Metro Rooter, the call you need to make. Our Wednesday sponsor of Jaguars Today here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Stop it, O'Halloran. You're trying to get me in trouble. I just threw out a tweet. Tony, seeing if Tony can play some golf this afternoon. Tony's a busy man.
Can't do it.
Short notice. Couldn't do it. My wife has basically told me I have to go play golf this afternoon, that she needs the house. All right. Fine. So I'm going to go play golf this afternoon. I know it's such an imposition on my
lifestyle.
So I just threw a tweet out there. If anybody wants to go play hooky and go play some golf this afternoon. You know, don't just like the tweet. Tell me.
Reply
to the tweet.
Thanks, Tyler, for visiting.
But be serious about it. Like,
I wanted to surprise you, Ryan.
It's always welcome.
So O'Halloran tweets out that Nick wants me to take him playing golf for his high school graduation present. Speaking of which, my nephew Cameron Nash graduating from Stanton Prep next week. Very proud of him. Smart kid. Going to Alabama. And he's a handsome young man. And, you know, I can't claim any of that. I'm not responsible for any of that. And probably my staying away from his development is the key to his development, is my guess, but very proud of him. So there you have it. All right. Congratulations, Nick, and all the rest of you. I'm not following anyone else on Twitter today. No one. All right. Nick now has 34 followers, by the way. So he's a media empire unto himself. All right.
Well, the bad part is now if you decide to unfollow him, he's going to notice.
Will he?
So you have to,
because it'd be down to 33.
Yeah. So you have to stick with him.
I don't mind. You know, here's the thing, dirty little secret. I follow, like, if I have a guest on, I'll follow them, you know, out of a kind of a, like a courtesy, whatever. And I rarely read anything on Twitter except what my notifications are. If people are tweeting at me, and occasionally, like if something big is going on, a big sporting event, I'll read, you know, the timeline just to get the buzz of, you know, everybody like following the NBA finals or something like that. But for the most part, I'm not sitting there reading just all the tweets of the people I follow. I assume that's what the case is with everybody, I would think.
I would think, yeah.
You know, who has time to do that? Let's get back to Julius Thomas. He has no time because he's preparing for world domination for the Jacksonville Jaguars this year. Was asked if he felt like he's been a little forgotten on the national level. You know,
good question by Hayes. Hayes asked this question.
Well, then, of course, it's a good question. Are you kidding me? Does he feel like he's been forgotten just a little bit because by his standards, it was a bit of a down year last year?
No, I don't really mind whether I'm remembered or forgotten. I think it just depends on the game, you know. Whether somebody mentions you or not, you have 100 yards, a couple touchdowns, now you're being mentioned. So you try not to really think about if you're being talked about. I mean, hopefully, you hope you're not. Hopefully, they're just letting you go to work and you're getting to play football and enjoy it. But, you know, whether or not, I have a lot of buzz going into this year. I know what I put in. I know what I can bring to the field.
I mean, the buzz for him is reserved for Robinson and Hurns, and it's going to be fascinating to see how this offense includes Julius on a full-time basis. When he signed here, they're looking at this being a two tight end base offense. When he was missing, they went three wide. Allen Hurns emerged. They expected Allen Robinson to emerge anyway. So is this how are they going to deploy him? Are they going to run more two tight end and have Lewis in the game basically as a sixth pass protector? And then move Julius around the formation. Those are some things we'll find out in preseason.
They're going to try different things, obviously. You're not going to do the same thing every time. But what you suspect is the highest percentage that they run too tight or they run three wide?
I still think there'll be a three wide predominantly because if Lee, they like Rashad Green as a slot. And if Marquise stays healthy, maybe he gets incorporated. So, you know, you go Robinson, Lee, Thomas, then it's either going to be Rashad Green, Mercedes Lewis, that type of thing.
And I think part of it will be impacted certainly by, will the offensive line reshaped provide better protection where you have to not hold a guy in and give him help as much, therefore lessening the need for Mercedes Lewis on the football field, I think, for this football team.
No doubt. Julius Thomas brought in to be a pass catcher. He's not been brought in to be a pass protector or a run blocker. He was asked yesterday about his blocking, obviously an aspect of his game that not many people talk about.
When you get known for something, I mean, that's just what you're known for. So you don't probably won't get much mention, and that's a fine. But, you know, I work on it whenever I get an opportunity. You know, they have a lot of stuff that we have to do every day. But, you know, when I get my free time, individuals, or when the guys are out there doing special teams, just trying to work on different things, different areas where I can improve in the run game because I know how much more that'll help our offense. So it's never going to be something you're done working on, blocking, catching, but it's definitely something that I want to continue to improve at so I can give our offense more flexibility.
You know, Jags couldn't run the ball at many levels last year. It was particularly evident, I thought, in short yardage. You know, there's very few rushing touchdowns for this football team. Julius Thomas expected to be a big part of the red zone offense as well, and he was asked, how can this team overall improve in that area of the field?
You know, I think that, you know, reps helps. But, you know, we have to pay better attention to detail. We got to hit our spots. You're not going to get great opportunities in the NFL all the time. And when you get them, you have to take advantage of them. And that's what, you know, the great team's doing. That's what we're trying to build is, you know, if we have third and short, let's make sure we execute. That means guys up front, guys running routes, guys running the ball, quarterback, ID in front, ID in coverages. A lot goes into it. So it's definitely not simple. But we definitely know what we have to do, and when we're working as an offense to improve in those areas.
You hear a lot about this, Ryan, on both sides of the ball. Fits, right? You're like your run fits. One guy being out of position, if everything isn't executed to perfection, it can make a whole entire play break down. What was their shortcoming more so last year in the run game? Was it more of that, or was it more that they just didn't have the personnel?
Well, they lost one-on-one battles up front. You know, you just see guys getting tossed aside. So that was part of the problem. And, you know, they maybe want Yeldon to be a little bit more patient when he's given those short yardage chances, which he wasn't really given last year. So, and also, they didn't really have a guy who can make the first down. So personnel falls into it. That's why I think they got Ivory, even though his percentages weren't great last year. So they're trying different things, but I think it starts where they got to win up front first.
Julius Thomas, speaking after practice yesterday at the OTAs, talked about just having the opportunity to be healthy coming into this offseason and into the practices here.
I mean, yeah, it's hard to quantify how much getting to a new team and a new office and missing the majority of training camp and then trying to, one, get yourself in a rhythm and ready to go in the middle of the season. Also, develop a relationship and chemistry with a quarterback. It's probably as hard as the transition as you can have, and it could be. So I'm excited to be healthy this year and get going full speed.
All right, a couple more here from Julius Thomas. One on the addition of one of his former teammates from the Denver Broncos. What do you think about signing a Malik Jackson?
Oh, Malik, Sonny, I know Malik pretty good. We live pretty close to each other out in California, and you know, I was a big fan of that pickup. I think Malik is one of the players in this league that's improved every year. You know, it's one thing to say, you know, this guy is a pretty good player, and that he is, but every year I see him getting better, and every year he's putting more and more on himself to be a better player and be more dominant up front, and that's what you want as a teammate. So I'm excited for him to be here. It's great to have somebody that I know pretty well and also a player that I have a lot of respect for on the field.
Julius Thomas, one last comment from him.
Damn,
speaking
wind.
After OTAs, I know, talked about how he felt seeing his former team, the Broncos, hoist that championship last year.
All those guys, most of them I played with, and I saw that work they put in every day. You know, people say, you know, I've got that question a lot, and it's so many of those people deserve that championship. To see the level, the intensity that they played at, you could tell they wanted it. And it wasn't a surprise to me because I've been there with them and practicing and seeing the work that it takes to get yourself to that level, you know, being a part of some of the bumps and bruises also. You know, it's not an easy process, but, you know, once everybody learns what it's going to take to win a championship and they can go do it, then it can be done. So definitely happy for so many of those guys, and it's a great accomplishment to have.
Malik, how does it feel, and did you really expect to be back here at the Super Bowl for the second consecutive year despite being on a new team?
Now you're getting into the spirit.
I'm going to lead with that one at opening
night. Does this championship mean more?
Right. Which one would mean more to you? This one that the Jaguars are about to play for in Houston, or the one you won previously with the Denver Broncos, which no one really remembers at this point in time, right? It's got to be Super Bowl 51, I think. Honing that opening question for him at the podium. You think we'll get preferred spots at the podium? Probably not, huh? Still got to fight for yours on the floor of Media Day?
Well, no, this is what you're going to do. You're going to have that 10-10 mic flag, and when it gets done, you're going to say, Julius, can I steal an extra 90
seconds? Here on the Jaguar official.
Behind the podium.
Right, the flagship network of the Jacksonville Jaguars. If you can extricate yourself from Deion Sanders' arm, I know it's draped around you right now as if you're best buddies, and he has you over for dinner every day, as he likes to portray. Let's get to a couple comments from Gus Bradley. We were talking about the defense. With Malik Jackson, Gus asked if this yesterday's OTA practice was the best effort he's seen out of the defense so far.
I thought so. Yeah, of the days, just most productive. You know, you hope that when you go into it, you see it go back and forth. Offense has a good day, defense has a good day. You know where it goes back and forth. So I just think that it's coming along. You know, and what we're seeing, and the guys, you know, had some energy today too. You know, I think when you have those bursts like that, it gives them a good taste in the mouth.
Hey, Tyler, can we play Gus's opening cut?
This is really a week for us to really kind of hone in on situational football. A lot of red zone emphasis you saw today, some two-minute, no huddle, but trying to put our guys more in some situations throughout the week. But I thought it was overall pretty good. Came back off of a long break. Defense, I thought, you know, had a real sharp day, and they need it. The first couple days, I thought we were close to being on it. But, you know, the big emphasis in today's meeting was more of the precision, and it felt better today.
So we talked about at the top of the show. That was his opening statement. So I wasn't going to ask and say, hey, did the defense have a better day than were they terrible last week? So you could tell that they met yesterday and said, hey, you know, let's you know, the foundation was last week. Let's build it to another level. And I mean, they were all over the football yesterday. I mean, multiple interceptions.
One last cut here from Gus Bradley. He was asked to close things out yesterday if he feels like the defense is showing a sense of urgency to improve.
Yeah, I am. It's you know, sometimes we talk about, hey, it's a process, and it is, but we're trying to do everything we can to speed that up. And I think that, you know, some of the guys that are coming in to help our veterans are some other veterans. You know, Gibson and, you know, and Malik and, you know, those guys coming in, I think have really fit in nice with our group, and you're starting to see them hold each other accountable. Not as much as we want right now, but it's coming. So that's always a good sign because usually that takes the longest.
All right, there you go. A little bit from Gus Bradley. You heard from Julius Thomas. Allen Robinson also meeting with the media yesterday. Not a long session with Allen, so not a whole lot to play back there. Today's question of the day, fan feedback spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, is this: who will be the Jags' defensive MVP this year? A lot of candidates to choose from. We'll take a look at some of the nominees you put forth coming up in just a few minutes here on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Also, if we have time, take a look at the ESPN ranking of the 100 most famous athletes in the world currently right now, and how does the NFL factor into that list? All that and more coming up. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you. Who's the defensive MVP of the Jags in 2016, Rhino?
I'm going to go. I got two things.
You got items. He has notes.
Yes. One, I'll go with Tayshaun Gibson for defense because I think that award is dependent on turnovers and big plays. Secondly, the Jaguars are going to announce this later today that their joint practices with Tampa Bay will be Wednesday, August 17th, Thursday, August 18th, and then the game on the 20th. I don't know if they'll be open to the public. I don't know if they'll be announcing times later today, but those are the two dates. To me, those are the best 2 days of training camp.
August 17th and 18th, make your plans to play hooky from work.
Yes.
Right. Much like the people making their plans to play hooky today and play golf.
Any takers?
I need more than, hey, yes, I do want to take off. I guess I asked a pretty generic thing, who wants to play hooky and play golf? I do. I can't, but I do want to do that. I'm serious. Who wants to go play golf? Hit me up on Twitter right now, because I'm making plans. They're very malleable right now. I'm thinking around 2 o'clock somewhere out on the great state road we call 210. By the way, Tayshaun Gibson, Tony, I think is, if I had to pick one guy, I think that's a solid guy. He may have the short odds for the Jaguars.
Yeah, and if you look at the responses we got today, that seems to be where they're leaning towards as well, is a lot of Gibson, a lot of Telvin Smith, if they're not going with Telvin or with Tayshaun Gibson, so... kind of those guys are the ones that were mentioned the most, at least today.
Here's what I got on Facebook, and we'll get some of the Twitter ones in there. Damon said, so much talent, it's hard to pick just one, but I'll do this. 1A Gibson, 1B Ramsey. A lot of people think Ramsey is going to come in and be their MVP right away. It's possible.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, you look at the season that Marcus Peters had last year for the Kansas City Chiefs, had 8 interceptions, right, as a first-round pick. Why not? If you can come in, if you have that kind of turnover impact, I agree with you. Those are the kind of things that get noticed.
That's why Malik is always going to be a tough, like, if you vote on award. I mean, if you have the coaches vote after a great season, they'll give the defensive tackle more notoriety.
Unless he has a season like Sindarik had a couple of years ago,
sure,
where he was clearly the standout with the 8.5 sacks. Kevin went with Gibson. Marshall went with Gibson, and he also hashtagged T-Wig to Jaguars Today, make it happen. Marshall has not let that go since T-Wig joined us last week on the program. Just giving some love to our guy there. Tommy says, Miles Jack is the biggest opportunity to be around the ball. If he's slow out of the gate, I could see House surprising us all. It would be a shock to see House have a really good year, I don't think. I thought he was the best they had at the position last year. Clifton said, definitely Posluszny. He has been the last couple of seasons. In his opinion, leads the NFL in tackles since 2011. Jason voted for Telvin. A lot of people voted for Telvin. Derek Stewart went with Ryan Davis.
Interesting.
That is interesting.
Boy, if that's the case, he deserves a T-shirt.
Then he goes, however, the special teams will struggle. Hashtag eye roll. Get it? I do get that.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
Yeah. Kenneth went with Gibson. Jonathan went with either Fowler or Telvin. Steve Muncy went with Fowler Jr. as their sack leader and thus their MVP. Another vote for Telvin, Gibson or Fowler, Miles Jack. Too easy, Tayshaun Gibson, and then Telvin. I heard many people say on Twitter, this is too easy, this is Telvin's to win. I think Telvin needs to make more big plays, Tony, if he's going to take down that award. He's a fan favorite. He's a great guy. He's a good player. He needs to make more splash plays. I know he got into the top 100 this year. I'd like to see him really earn his way into the top 100 this year.
Yeah, create some turnovers, and maybe he'll be put in more positions to do that with Miles Jack coming and Jack being the guy that's put on the tight end, and maybe Telvin's given a little bit more free room to roam a little bit on this defense than he has the first couple of years.
Yeah, I think Miles is going to be a wild card. Okay, will he be on the field? Like, how much will he be on the field? Because I think he could be a guy that makes a – instant impact, because they're in the building. They're like, okay, when he gets here, he's going to learn so fast because he can pick it up. This can be no issue. As I wrote Sunday's paper, who's going to be your 2 third down linebackers? They made it a point to say, okay, don't rule out Plus Lesney as staying on the field.
I've been
sort of saying, okay, saying I think it's going to start that way.
Right.
I think it's going to be Miles Jack and Paul Plus Lesney, because one of the inside the building, they want to challenge Telvin Smith. So I think that's going to be something that I don't think we're going to really truly know that until the first sub package down against Green Bay, because I think they're going to keep their options either under wraps or open during the preseason.
Right. I think in the preseason we may say many everything. Different yeah. combinations of that going on. All right. So, and Tyler.
Apparently the Jaguars listened to the Jaguars Today
Hello,
program.
Hello, Jaguars.
Because we just got the news release about the time and dates for the practice schedule. With the open practices 2 minutes ago. So.
Yes, Ryan O'Halloran prompted an early sending of the memo.
I don't see no times yet, though, right?
No times on the release, no.
Just take the whole day off, all right? Just be done with it. August 17th and 18th.
If it's a 9 a.m. practice and they get done at noon, like 11:30 noon, you're going to want to go home.
Hey, by the way, anticipate this. If the Bucs have a good day throwing the ball, fresh wave of, I told you they should have drafted Jameis last year.
Ryan O'Halloran says, Josh Norman.
See? Exactly. O'Halloran's going to be doing that regardless.
Josh Norman would have
first
shut down Mike Evans.
First time Aaron Rodgers completes a 10-yard pass to Jordy Nelson right there. Josh Norman should have had him.
Both of the practices against
the
Tampa Bay Bucs.
The good part is that 95% of the people will get that joke. The vocal 5%. And what it costs too much.
The open practices with the Bucs are open to the public.
They are, yes. They are open to the public.
Correct, yes.
Right, hence the open practice designation on that. Just being a smart ass, as I want to be. ESPN did a list of the most famous athletes in the world, top 100. Have you perused it?
I haven't.
Don't look. Okay. I'll ask you who you think is on there, because we told you a couple of things. Gave you a few hints as to where certain players ranked. Now, how do you figure who's the most popular athlete in the world? I don't know how you really
come up with that. They
basically,
like, they took salary plus endorsements plus basically their online presence.
Right, social media following. What if you don't tweet a lot?
Yeah.
Right, but I guess that factors into your popularity.
Or, like, if you click on the individuals on there, it'll show salary, endorsements. It'll be, like, Twitter followers and Facebook likes, I think, is the four things
they show.
Well,
that eliminates anybody pre-1990.
Well, yeah, because it's only going to be active athletes on
right.
this list.
Right, there's an active athlete list. And, you know, it's dominated by a lot of soccer players, a lot of cricket players. Cricket's a big sport worldwide, obviously. Cristiano Ronaldo's number one. LeBron James, number two. Lionel Messi is number three. Neymar is four. Federer is five. So you get tennis. Kevin Durant, interesting, at six. I'll just give you the top ten. Tiger Woods at seven. Virat Kohli is a cricket player. Don't know anything about him. James Rodriguez looks like a soccer player.
He's a soccer player who wasn't good enough to start in the Champions League final.
Is that right?
Yeah, he didn't start Saturday.
You don't have to be good to be popular, I guess, or well known.
No, we'll see him on Friday night, I promise you.
Then Rafa. Rafa. Rafi on the doll.
Sam's Army.
Ryan, if I went to the heart of Africa, if I went to the outback in Australia, if I went as far away from American football as it's played typically, and I asked people around the world to name three American football players who are currently playing, who would get named?
Currently playing, that eliminates Peyton.
Right, that eliminates Peyton, but he is still on this list.
He would be on that list. I think Brady would be on that list, and Brian Anger.
he's full of them today, folks.
The third one would be, I guess, Cam.
Cam, because of the recent, right? Yeah. Wins the MVP. He's in the Super Bowl. He's, you know.
He does a lot of things.
He's got an online presence, all these things. So, these were the football players that were in, the American football players. Cam Newton came in 32nd. Most popular or most famous, I guess you'd say, athlete from American football. Peyton Manning came in at 38. Odell Beckham Jr. at 40. Is it the Khloe Kardashian bump he's getting right now? Is that,
I don't know.
Is that what that
is that what the kids are calling it these
days? I don't
know. The bump?
That's one thing they're calling it. moving on. Drew Brees is 44th. Still no Tom Brady. Russell Wilson is 49th. All these guys more well-known, more famous than Tom Brady.
So Tom Brady is below him because he's not even on Twitter, right? He's on Facebook.
Right. That's probably what it is.
Internationally, they don't follow cheaters.
Is that what it is? I think they know who Tom Brady is.
Shot.
I have no idea.
Kidding me? And you seeing like isn't everyone's Olympic organization corrupt around the world except ours?
It might be.
Because we're Americans.
Is there a lot of Olympic athletes on this list?
We don't cheat. No, there's not. My point being, there's cheating is widespread around the globe, Tony. Tom Brady comes in 52nd overall among the most famous athletes. I got to believe if you go anywhere Tom Brady's won 4 Super Bowls. Deflategate. He's married to
a
supermodel.
That's the one.
Come on. Yeah. I think he's the most well-known.
Hacker, are you surprised that no Jaguar is on the top 100?
Wait a minute. Does anyone outside of America know what Entourage is, though? That would be the next question.
Maybe Europe.
what question do you have for Hacker?
Were you surprised that no Jaguar is on the top 100?
You're kidding me? I want to find out where my Broncos are. Moving along. Aaron Rodgers. Number 53, J.J. Watt.
I thought Watt would be higher.
Are you kidding me? Just ask Jag Twitter. He's the most overrated athlete that's ever walked the planet. He's 56th. And Marshawn Lynch at 61.
That's pathetic.
Why is it?
He was hurt all last year. He's been a non-factor for like a year and a half.
But he's been very famous. I mean, it doesn't mean he's not famous. Peyton Manning, it was a non-factor for a lot of last year, too.
I bet his endorsement money went out the roof here in the last couple of years.
I'm thankful.
Marshawn?
Yeah. Because he was doing like Sprite and he was doing Skittles.
Skittles, yeah.
Like he was doing a couple different things and it was kind of out of like it was the aftermath of the Super Bowl win.
Right.
And the way that he talked to the media and then the going back against the Patriots and the way he handled it again.
Eli came in at 66. This is the top 100 most famous athletes in the world. Well-known athletes. Andrew Luck at 69. Not really? Andrew, I mean, I'm not trying to knock Andrew Luck, but he had a season where he basically was off the radar, right? It was terrible. I don't know.
That was my point on Lynch.
Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, at least Lynch has been a Super Bowl champ. Like Tony said, he's been in the big game a couple of times.
Luck has no social media presence.
Is that right?
He's got a book club.
He does have the book club.
Yeah.
There you go. Growing in popularity. Tony Romo is 70th.
I like Tony.
Gronkowski is 72. See, I would think Gronk is pretty well known. This is for his antics, right?
I would think so.
At least in the Caribbean, or
I wonder how tight like the rankings are. You know, once you get down to like this part of the list, just like how much actually separates
right,
these
probably
guys.
Nothing. Andy right. Dalton is more well known than Ben Roethlisberger. I don't buy that.
It's the red hair.
I don't buy that. What is Andy Dalton known for? Losing in the playoffs. What is he known for?
It's something.
I guess. I mean, I'm not saying no one knows who Andy Dalton is. I don't think worldwide he is as notorious, certainly, as Big Ben.
Probably not.
Big Ben. Do you? Carson Palmer's 99. So, there you have it. Who's the most famous all-time Jaguar, would you say? Is it Brunell? Because he's on ESPN?
And he had success when he was here.
He did.
I mean, anybody younger than 30 would probably say Maurice.
Maurice would be the other one, I would think, right?
Because since the advent of fantasy, since he came in, he is a fantasy football guy.
Right, and now he's doing work with NFL Network and NFL.com and all that stuff. But I would put probably Brunell at the top of the list because you see him on ESPN talking NFL, even if you don't recall his playing days, right? We're talking worldwide fame here now.
Now, there may not be. I think there may be a lot of football fans that have no idea what team Mark Brunell played for.
Possibly.
When they're watching him on ESPN, I think everybody who watches football knows Maurice Jones-Drew was a Jaguar. Like, I just think he's equated with this team maybe a little bit more than Mark Brunell. I'm not sure which name is better known. My guess would be Mojo, though.
Either way, it's a much lower level of
than this? Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Without question. You know, so again, Andy Dalton, not buying that. I don't know. The methodology is the whole thing. You know, I guess you have to come up with some formula that figures
it out. Well, it's kind of silly, too. I only clicked through, like, the first 5 names on the list to look at the numbers they had to compare them. And it's like Ronaldo, who's number one on the list, his Facebook likes are, like, 115 million or something like that. So I clicked to the next one, and the Facebook likes dropped to like 45. Like, that's how much
45 million?
Yeah. Oh. That's how much more popular
like 45 dudes,
a guy
really.
Like Ronaldo is in that kind of stratosphere than like anybody else on the planet right now. Then that's comparing him to LeBron James, just how much bigger Cristiano Ronaldo is across the world right
Soccer's
now.
Pretty popular. It's the bottom line,
it's pretty big.
I am locked in for USA Colombia on Fox Sports 1 on Friday night. Are you kidding me, Tyler? You want to come over and watch?
Nobody watches Fox Sports 1.
Tony will on Friday.
I will be.
FS1, baby.
Copa 2016, I'll be watching.
I was going to say, this guy's been retired for about 12, 15 years now, but Michael Jordan, he's probably got to still be the most famous.
Is he more famous than Ali?
I would think so. Everybody knows who Michael Jordan is.
Probably.
I don't know.
There's a whole generation that didn't grow up with with Ali being an active athlete, right?
But I wonder how big a name like Ali still is overseas.
Ali Boumaye.
Right. Like, I do wonder how much that still carries, that he did that kind of stuff.
Plus the Jordan brand sneakers. The Jordan brand's huge now.
Pele bigger than both of them?
No.
I don't know if he's bigger than both of them. Pele, I mean, you see how strong soccer is as a brand.
That's what I'm saying.
And basketball is pretty strong, too. I mean, they got LeBron and Durant there in the top six.
That is pretty strong.
Yeah.
Basketball is a world game.
Yeah.
All right, that'll do it for us. Most famous guy in this room would be Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union. Got that byline, baby. What do you have coming up in the paper?
We got some good stuff. Tomorrow we have a story on Marquise Lee. Phil Heilman wrote that. Friday's paper will have some comments from both coordinators who are scheduled to talk tomorrow after the workout. And then Sunday, spent some time with Jared Odrick talking about everything but football, sort of what he did this offseason, what his goals were for doing and meeting the people he did. So sort of more of a personality type story. So, and I had fun talking to him about that. And so it'd be in Sunday's paper with some of his Instagram photos from his travels.
All right. Instagram photos can get you in trouble, I hear. So be careful with that. Use good judgment, Jaguars, on what you do with your Instagram.
He's not filming anybody rolling anything.
No, I'm just saying. I can neither confirm nor deny that any of that has ever taken place. But just the Instagram and the Snapchat can get you in trouble from what I hear. That's
no
what
doubt.
The kids tell me these days. Tomorrow, hopefully, we'll have a Jag in studio live. Following OTA practice. Don't know who it'll be yet. Thanks, Clifton Brown, for joining us today from CSN Mid-Atlantic, previewing the Ravens, the Week 3 opponent for the Jags, one per week as we march towards the inevitable start of the 2016 NFL season. That'll do it for us. For Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, for Fat Tony and Ryan O'Halloran, I'm Mike Dempsey signing off on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Thanks for tuning in here. Coming up next, the Midday Chalk on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.